As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Another week, another episode of Straight Outta Cobham on today's pod. Spurs seen off in stunning second half CFC salvo. We remember Jimmy Greaves. Look ahead to the midweek clash with Villa and plenty more besides. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Hey listener, hope you're good. Another week, another 3-0 win. Easy this Premier League lark, isn't it? I'm Matt Davis-Adams, joined today by Sam Parkin.
Morning, Matt.
And from The Athletic, the one and only Dominic Fifield. Hi, Dom.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. And the first stop for us today is going to be another delightful derby day.
That's for Laquetta, and now here's Werner running into the box. Cuts it back for Rudiger, who sweeps in number three for Chelsea. Finishes the job. Sends those Chelsea fans behind the corner flag absolutely jubilant.
We lacked energy and we lacked compactness and we lacked the belief to decide 50-50 duels onto our side. And that had to change. And this is what we did. Second half was very, very good and I'm happy about it.
I think it was a very good half from Tottenham. They put a lot of intensity. It was difficult for us. But we reacted very well in second half and we are happy with the three goals and with the result.
Tottenham 0, Chelsea 3 at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Sunday then. Listener, you can insert your own Spurs net zero joke here. Fairly even in the first half, but then, as is his wont, Thomas Tuchel made a brilliant tactical change, bringing in N'Golo Kante and going with three in midfield and two in attack. 45 minutes later, Chelsea had romped to a 3-0 win. Easy. Here's Sean, who's tweeted the pod, to ask how much credit does Tuchel deserve and why is it all of it? Dom, I feel like I'm just going to become a bit of a Thomas Tuchel fanboy here in that I think that he is pretty much untouchable in terms of Premier League coaches at the moment. Am I overselling it? Has he just got by far the best squad or is it his genius which is turning games in Chelsea's favour?
Well, I think even he admitted that it does help. If you want to change things at half-time in a game, you've got N'Golo Kante, a World Cup winner, Champions League winner, arguably the best midfielder in the world, for all Simon's protestations, to bring on. He can change a contest and the momentum of a game just with one tactical switch. So having that depth of squad is clearly quite beneficial to Thomas Tuchel. But that said, everything he does at the moment is coming off, literally everything. I suppose you could argue that he's having to make these switches because his original selections aren't quite there, but even that's pushing it because although Tottenham probably edged that first half and were certainly the dominant force in midfield, Chelsea still had the resilience to soak it up. That back line still dealt with everything that was thrown at them. Thiago Silva dealt with Son Heung-min on him, which is, you know, on paper quite a task when Son's on form. And then they just flipped that switch at half-time and the second half was, I mean, for Spurs, it was utterly humiliating. For Chelsea, it was just a reminder of all the quality they have and the pedigree they have in that team. They were utterly, utterly dominant. And a lot of that is down to Tuchel recognising a problem, coming up with a solution, and it working.
Sam, for me, it's the... I'm not sure ruthlessness is the right word, because I think he's a little bit softer than that, but it's the absolute calculation of uncertainty of his actions. You know, yesterday at halftime, Mason Mount, Chelsea's player of the year, undroppable under Frank Lampard. Sorry, you're coming off at halftime. I've spotted this problem. I've found the solution for it. This is what's happening. As a player, you know, the likes of Mount can't have any complaints, can they? Because the results bear out the fact that the decisions Tuchel is making are consistently the right ones.
Yeah, it seems to be this new age of managers where they do make these really proactive decisions. I think going back a few years, even at the highest level, you'd be given a 10-15 minute window of opportunity to improve in the second half before your number goes up. But that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. And you're right, he seems to be getting these big decisions right. Because I think watching that game yesterday, I don't think Mason Mount was particularly worse than any other player. You know, looking at the touches this morning, him and Havertz had plenty of the ball. They had plenty of attempts. Well, they didn't work the goalkeeper in the first half. I think his execution of his final ball is letting him down right now. And I don't know if it's a little bit of fatigue, but that's the only criticism I can have about Mason Mount. And interesting to hear, I think I read in Dom's piece this morning that Thomas Tuchel spoke that it wasn't necessarily a change in system. I mean, to my eyes, it looked like a change in system. But I think I've spoken of Mason Mount's willingness to get back and be that third midfielder when Chelsea haven't got the ball and still be able to be the number 10, one of the number 10s when they have got the ball. So maybe it was just a little switch to make Kante, obviously, as a more orthodox holding midfield player, so and probably wouldn't have the... Or probably, yeah, and it doesn't really have it in his armoury to go and play off a striker as Mason Mount can. So it was maybe that was the alteration rather than a complete change in shape. But yeah, brilliant decision because it not only stemmed Tottenham's forceful performance from the midfield in the first half, it probably gave them an extra short pass as well if Chelsea were building out because they had someone a little bit closer. So it worked twofold and... obviously, the timings of the goal, Matt, is everything as well. The first goal, you know, swings the momentum hugely in Chelsea's favour. But yes, he deserves enormous credit again today.
And encouraging, actually, Dom, even if he says it wasn't a total change of formation, but to see some tactical flexibility, because that's maybe the one thing that we haven't seen too much of under Tuchel.
Yeah, I mean, the one of the few times he went to four at the back, for example, I think it was Leeds last season. Chelsea looked very, very ineffective that afternoon. So you're right, they've sort of settled on a system and they've stuck with it. And there is a slight adaptation there. I'm intrigued now to see how he goes into the City game at the weekend. Does he retain that three-man midfield and play Jorginho, Kovacic and Conte in the same team to ensure that they control that midfield area against City, which is, you know, an area of the team. That's where you win your battle probably against Manchester City. And does that have implications for Mount or Havertz? Does Timo Werner come into that team for one of those two, or for both, you know, and Kante for the other one to stretch the play a bit? I mean, it's a really intriguing selection in the build-up to that match, because that is a critical game now, because they can... Chelsea's momentum is hugely, hugely impressive at the moment. If they beat City at the weekend, then... it's way too early to be talking about two-horse races, but that is a statement. That's a proper psychological damage being inflicted on a direct rival. So what would Sam? What would you do? What do you reckon for that midfield? Would you play all three on Saturday?
Quite possibly, yeah. Quite possibly. I think you obviously saw the impact that Werner had as well. That's another decision for the manager to make if he goes with just the two pronged attack, if you like. But I know it was against a Spurs team that were very down on their confidence, but it seemed to work in an attacking sense and give you the stability as well. So. Yeah, against one of the top sides, it may be the way that he wants to go, definitely to control the midfield. And it's hard to think that he's going to have to leave one of them out at times, given the form they're all in. I mean, Kovacic has been a revelation this year. Jorginho's as good as he's ever been. And Kante obviously showed yesterday that he's back up to speed. So that's probably one of the strongest areas of the squad right now. So to go with three of them would probably seem sensible for some fixtures.
We mentioned some individuals there, somebody you haven't touched on yet, Thiago Silva. Dom, we're going to have to upgrade him to Thiago Gold soon, aren't we? I mean, 37 on Wednesday.
Staggering, isn't it? I mean, that was a real test up against Son in the first half. And there were periods where you thought, well, Spurs have, Nuno's actually struck upon a tactical plan here that's going to force Chelsea back and Spurs, against the odds, might actually get something from this match. But the way he sort of rose to the challenge and the way he carries himself on a football pitch, it seems to sort of rub off on Rudiger and Christensen at his side as well. And they, I mean, Rudiger's been playing brilliantly for a long time, but Christensen, he's just come back from the summer tournament, a changed man. Again, I mean, maybe bolstered by the performance he put in the Champions League final as well, admittedly. But when you've got Thiago there as an inspiration, who is leading that line, who's dictating how they play, it just hoists the performances up to new levels. And I mean, it felt a risk bringing him to England at this stage of his career so late on, but he's been used very cleverly, quite shrewdly. They've picked and chosen the games that he plays, particularly this season. And if he's still capable of putting in performances like that, he's going to be a key player for, what, 20 league games this season? 20 of the biggest league games, I'd argue, as well this season. And can inspire this miserly Chelsea back line to new levels of excellence.
Yeah, Chelsea conceded one goal in the Premier League all season, and that was a penalty. Sam, I feel with Thiago Silva, if I was a striker, he'd be one of the defenders I'd least like to face, because, you know, if you're going to play against Tony Rudiger, he's going to smash you about and run in from nowhere and make great tackles and challenge you in the air, etc. But with Thiago Silva, he just seems to step in front of players and take the ball off them without breaking sweat. And that must be really dispiriting for anybody going up against him.
Yeah, I'd much prefer to play against someone that wants to have a fight, essentially. You know where you're at with that. And, you know, someone like him who is very clever. I mean, there's no obvious weakness in his game right now. It's even I think in that central one, you want him to have the ability to step out and play crucial passes at times in games. And there was one crossfield ball, I think, for Alonso, who'd made the most minuscule little bit of movement as to where he wanted the ball. And Silva picked out his left foot from kind of 40 yards. So I think he brings that in abundance, and you want that in your middle player of the three. But then defensively brilliant, and then obviously a big threat from set pieces as well. I mean, it's very clever. I mean, Dele Alli, it was pitiful, the attempts to stop him, but it's brilliant play from Silva, and a wonderful header. So he's got that in his armoury as well. And as Dom says, yeah, kind of cajoles the rest of the back line wonderfully well. He's completely bought into the Premier League and Chelsea, and I mean, you're not going to give him 2 or 3 years, are you? But certainly you'd want to see him around next year, given his form right now.
Dom, your post-match piece for The Athletic, you say that the team appears ready to win the Premier League. What I thought underlined that was the fact that the front three didn't have a particularly good game in this match. You know, Lukaku had a few chances toward the end, Mount off at half-time, Havertz not particularly influential. And yet, as soon as Chelsea got the first goal, there was no doubt about the result of the game.
Yeah, and that says a lot, really, that even with the two number 10s not quite clicking yet, still looking for that balance, and that we saw that last week against Zenit and Aston Villa as well, that they're still finding ways of winning very, very comfortably. Personified to a certain extent by Marcus Alonso, I thought. I mean, he's a player that I don't think there would have been too many tears had he moved on in the summer. I think we all know what Marcus Alonso's limitations have always been. I mean, and where his sort of the ceiling is for his performances. He's excellent going forward, and you know, when teams find a way beyond him, his positioning can be awry. But maybe in that Conte year possibly, but I don't remember him playing this well that often. I mean, he was. I know he likes to raise his game for games at Spurs, but he was phenomenal on that flank, and he was camped in enemy territory for most of that second half. I mean, really advanced to the extent that he was actually getting in Lukaku's way at times, which I think was annoying Lukaku. But the volley that sort of set the tone for the second half right at the beginning of the period, I mean, that summed him up. Bursting down the flank, a constant threat. His delivery from set pieces is awesome. And I know we've been focusing on and asking the question, when does Ben Chilwell walk back into this team? And ultimately, I suspect he will get back into this team because he's a better defender than the Marcus Alonso, I imagine. But there's no displacing Alonso at the moment. He's playing in the form of his life and just looks completely content and at ease in these surroundings.
Yeah, he did excellently. Shout out too to Kepa, who came in last minute for the injured Mendy and apparently at one point had to make a save during the match. Brilliant win for Chelsea then. Before the game, tributes were paid to an icon of British football. We'll celebrate the life of Jimmy Greaves next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Sunday morning, it was announced that the great Jimmy Greaves had passed away at the age of 81. He came through the ranks at Chelsea, in many ways the first academy product in modern parlance. Still holds the record for most league goals scored in a season for the club, 41, back in 1959-60. That total included 6 hat-tricks that season. Overall, he scored 132 goals in 169 games for Chelsea before he went to AC Milan and Spurs. Remains the highest scorer in the history of English football with 357 goals. Sam, before your time as a player, but still an influence on you, I think.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I'd say I've seen much of him, and you know, obviously, clearly not a hero of mine because of the era, etc. But my dad very rarely gave me advice on football. I kind of was just taken and get on with it, which was a great thing. But there's kind of 3 memories I've got from my childhood. Work on both your feet was always the advice from my dad, which I did, and I became quite competent with both sides. Side foot the ball when you're in on goal, pass it into the corners, and try and go round the keeper was another thing my dad used to say to me. And looking at the goals, Jimmy Greaves' goals, certainly he never smashed the ball. Rarely did he smash the ball. It was all about passing it into the corners. And the other 2 things completely run true as well. So I think indirectly or directly, my dad, having grown up in that era and watched Jimmy Greaves, who was a hero of his and who he spoke about a lot, even to this day, I think it probably did have an impact on my career and the way that I kind of wanted to be as a striker. And looking back over his goals, the first thing that struck me was just how two-footed he was. Incredible, really. I don't think I could tell you which foot was his favoured. The grace that he got away from people. So it wasn't just, you know, predatory finishes. It wasn't just hanging around the goal. He could move as well. And almost George Best-esque, some of the goals that I've seen in the last 24 hours, the way he's slaloming past people. And obviously, you know, I remember him from Saint and Greavesy, and I think, you know, the supporters of the clubs, the London clubs that he played for, loved him because he was a maverick, wasn't he? And there's some great tales of him and Bobby Moore, who was his big mucker. So I think he had a great rapport with the supporters, and certainly people of my generation loved him on the telly. So yeah, for the older people like my dad, who watched him as a player, loved him, and for people like myself, just loved him as a character. So sorely missed. And when you're looking through those stats, some of those you reeled off there, Matt, it's like you're reading Roy the Rovers, isn't it? It's ridiculous. I think he's scored 17 penalties out of 382 club goals as well, which, you know, blows some modern day players out the water in terms of their stats.
Yeah, one of his seasons as a junior at Chelsea, he got 114 goals in one season. Somebody, I forget who, apologies, but one of the papers this morning describing him scoring a goal as like somebody closing the door on a Rolls Royce, which I thought was really nice. And Dom, Sam used the word grace there, and that's something that struck me about the finish. Is he's never seems to be leathering the ball in or even scuffing it in. It's always placed delicately, you know, like he's putting a baby bird back into its nest, sort of thing. The care with which he's taking.
Absolutely, and it's natural grace, poise, balance. There was a delicacy about it all. He did everything naturally. I was listening to David Pleat talking about him yesterday, and Pleat is someone I worked with a lot at my previous job, and he knows so much about football. But you could tell just from the way he was speaking about Jimmy Greaves that just how much he admired him. He was telling a story about, I think, a game where his Exeter team were playing Jimmy Greaves, and at one point Exeter were pulling off a bit of a cup shock and winning 3-2, and then Greaves just decided to turn it on and just waltzed through them three times in the last 5 minutes and scored a hat trick. So they won by 6-3, I think, in the end. And he just had that ability, just, you know, when he focused, he would just glide through the opponents between centre halves and then caress the ball into the corner, and just a wonderful, wonderful talent. We'll always think of, I suppose, the disappointment that he suffered in 66, which clearly bugged him and clearly annoyed him throughout his life and disappointed him that he was in that England team. He was the first choice striker until an injury got him in the group stage and in the France game, and ended up with Geoff Hurst taking his place in the side for the latter stages. But the goal scoring record speaks for itself. The way that he's spoken about by anyone who played him, anybody who saw him, anybody who worked with him speaks for itself. And the way that he took to broadcasting, I mean, you're probably a better place to speak about this, Matt. I mean, I grew up watching Satan Greasy as well. It was a Saturday. It was what you did. You preferred it to Football Focus. With Ian St. John and Jimmy Greaves on the television in an era where we were suffering blackouts in terms of broadcasts in this country, 12 weeks without any football coverage whatsoever on our televisions. And he was there with Ian St. John talking football, doing features, making things lively without any clips or anything to back him up. And yet it was engaging television because he had that charisma, that sparkle in his eye, and that the mischief between the pair of them was just... It was engaging, and he'll be fondly remembered on that front as well.
Yeah, that Saint and Greavesy was destination television for people of our age, and definitely one of the things that made me want to get into broadcasting. But I hope I can do it as effortlessly as he seemed to one day, in the same way that it was effortless the way that he scored goals. Jimmy Greaves, a Chelsea great and a football great.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Maybe you go for a run, or take a nap, or read a book. Maybe you just luxuriate in doing absolutely nothing. Many of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your daily schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online and it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a licensed therapist. And if things don't click, you can switch to someone new at any time with no additional charge. BetterHelp provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise with no referral needed. And because you listen to this podcast, you can get 10% off your first month of online therapy by heading to betterhelp.com/cobham. That's BETERHELP.com/cobham. COBHAM.
Right, Chelsea begin their Carabao Cup campaign on Wednesday night as familiar foes Aston Villa visit Stamford Bridge for the second time this month. The Blues exited the competition at this stage last season. We're expecting plenty of changes. I've asked the chaps to come up with their starting 11s for the game. I've done one too, so we'll see if we're thinking along the same lines. Let's go position by position, I think. Dom, who have you got in goal?
Well, I put Kepa just to maintain it, but I suppose there has to be a chance that Bettinelli plays, but... No, Kepa is just to maintain his form. Hopefully he'll get a few more saves to make in midweek than he did at Tottenham Hotspur, and that'll just boost his confidence even more, because I thought he was good at Spurs, considering the sort of late call-up, and that's reassuring in its own way.
Yeah, I went Bettinelli just because it'd be a chance to get him a game for Chelsea. Sam, have you gone Kepa as well?
I have, yeah, but I mean, it'll probably depend on the severity of Mendy's injury and how likely he's to be back for the weekend. So you can't have any risk with Kepa. But yeah, I think, you know, he'd get the nod in front of Bettinelli if Mendy's likely to be all right for the weekend.
Bettinelli, by the way, 41 league starts for Middlesbrough last season. So it's not like he's a third choice goalkeeper who hasn't played much in recent years. Dom, are you going three at the back? And if so, who's in it?
I've gone Chaloba, Christensen and Saar. I want to see Malang Saar play for the first time, and yeah, I mean, obviously Thiago Silva is going to need a rest. Two massive games coming up after this. Christensen to offer a bit of experience and a bit of guidance in there, but the other two I think deserve a chance.
I was a bit spooked by what I saw from Saar in that preseason friendly against Spurs, so I went Chaloba, Christensen, Rudiger. What about you, Sam?
I think Rudiger needs a rest above anyone else probably in the squad, and I probably wouldn't take a risk with Silva either. So I'm going to make Azpilicueta have another run out, and then Chaloba and Christensen can decide between themselves which one plays centrally and which one plays on the left, because, yeah, I think maybe too much of a risk to go with too much inexperience by throwing, well, in terms of Chelsea first team action, by throwing Saar in. So I think Chaloba could play either of those positions, to be honest, and Christensen.
Yeah, I think Trev's the one name that's nailed on everybody's team sheet, and probably Thomas Tuchel's too. You going wing-back / four in midfield, Dom?
Yeah, it all gets a bit sketchy from this moment on, I'm afraid, Matt. I've gone Reece James because he didn't play on Sunday. I've gone Ben Chilwell because he obviously needs the game time at left wing-back. And Saul needs a game, so he's playing in the middle, and then I've put N'Golo Kanté in there as well, just to get up some minutes. I'd hope that he wouldn't play the whole 90, and that maybe a Loftus-Cheek might come on for him, or a Barkley even possibly later on. But yeah, those are my four: James, Saul, Kanté, and Chilwell.
Ruben for Kanté is my only change on that. Sam, what about you?
I've gone Jorginho because he got his rest against, was it the first half against Aston Villa? I think, you know, Sal's obviously been brought into the club. He needs to play this game. Quite a test for him mentally. I know this is a top player from Europe, but he was so off colour against Aston Villa. You'd expect they'll go pretty strong. So, yes, yeah, it's a test for him, but he has to play and he has to get over that. So, yeah, I'd go for Jorginho just because he had that slight rest, and then, yeah, in complete agreement with the two wing-backs, that they definitely deserve an opportunity.
Front three-wise, I'm giving Callum a go in his favoured position alongside Timo Werner through the middle and Hakim Ziyech on the left. Can you offer any advance on that, Dom?
Exactly the same.
Sam?
Snap. Same for me, mate.
Oh, that was easy.
So Lukaku starts. And but this is his first League Cup tie ever, isn't it, for Tuchel? So, I mean, we are completely into the unknown. He may not have been told yet that you don't pick your first team in these matches.
Villa, Sam thinks they'll go fairly strong, Dom. I wonder who this game matters more to. Villa might think, well, we've got the semis of this competition and the final in recent seasons. Maybe it's a chance to kind of bear out the improvement that we've made by winning something. Whereas for Chelsea, it's clearly fourth on the list of priorities.
I think it probably means more to Villa, to be honest. I know they were fantastic with their victory this weekend. Very convincing win over Everton. I just wonder whether there might have been a bit of pressure building up in the background on Dean Smith. If a team makes the level of investment, I know they got the money obviously for Jack Grealish, but a lot of changes, a lot of big name players in, and the wage bill will have gone up as a result. I think the level of ambition and expectation rises accordingly, and I just wonder whether the hierarchy would have looked at that and they wouldn't necessarily have accepted a particularly mid-table stodgy start to the season. So they've got the relief from that emphatic win at the weekend over Everton, and they will target this as one of the routes to silverware, for all that the big clubs tend to end up winning this despite playing reserve teams throughout most of the competition. But I think for them, an ambitious club, big wage bill, big backing, yeah, they need to be going out there and winning it.
Spoiler alert, listener, Man City ended up winning the Carabao Cup in the 2021-2022 season.
Beating Villa in the final or Chelsea, who knows?
Beating a Spurs side managed by Harry Kane in the final, maybe. Anyway, whatever happens between Chelsea and Aston Villa, we'll bring you the fallout to that game on Thursday's pod. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, no action for the women's team this weekend, though plenty of players have been involved with their countries. Pernille Harder became Denmark's all-time leading scorer. She got two as they beat Malta 7-0, some massive wins. Xi on target for South Korea. Beat Mongolia, who in fairness aren't known for their footballing ability, but it was a 12-0 win for South Korea in that game. Erin Cuthbert was on target for Scotland against Hungary. And Bethany England bagged a brace as England made the perfect start to life under new coach Serena Weigman. They beat North Macedonia 8-0. In terms of the men's academy sides, the results this past weekend decidedly mixed. The under-18s beat Blackburn 3-2 in the under-18 PL Cup. That was at Cobham. The under-23s, though, hammered 6-1 at home by Arsenal on Sunday at King's Meadow. Sam, they're yet to win a game in the league this season. We're not used to this in our years of covering the dev squad as they are known. Have they just lost too many key players to really be competitive this season?
I think that's a big part of it. I think you have to, you know, commend the opposition and looking at their lineup at the weekend. Arsenal, Balogun got himself a brace and probably the best centre forward I've seen in academy football in the last two or three seasons outside of Chelsea. You know, top quality player. They have looked to add a bit more experience in their lineup. And of course, if you take three of the best performers out of any side, that has an impact. And I'm talking about Livramento, Colwill, and of course, Anderin, who are all quality players and further on in their development. And we know how Chelsea like to do it in the 23s. There'll be a lot of 17, 18, 19-year-old boys in there who probably haven't got a great deal of experience at that level. So it will take time. And of course, they've lost some superstars. So hopefully, Charlie Webster, for one, Harvey Vale, Soonsop Bell, the lads I have seen in the under-18s in the Youth Cup games, will lead by example and the results will turn. But, you know, just looking at it with the, you know, casting an eye across it, they've lost some top quality and this isn't probably as strong a group as been before.
Yeah, I wonder if we might see a Harvey Vale or a Soonsop Bell on the bench for the first team against Villa midweek. That'll just about do it for today. Before we go, Dom, what have you been working on for Athletic subscribers to peruse?
Well, I did the piece from the weekend about Chelsea's title aspirations, looking back, actually just revisiting Tuchel's initial press conference as manager back in late January, where he suggested he wanted to build a team that no one found it fun playing against, and that he wanted to close the gap to Liverpool and Manchester City by the start of this season at the latest. And well, quite frankly, he's done that, and probably a bit more by winning a European Cup, thinking about it. I'm off to the game midweek as well, the Villa game, and I'm intrigued to see how Timo Werner does. I'm looking forward to seeing him play 90 minutes. He doesn't go to extra time, does it? Can someone tell me that? No.
Straight to Benz.
That's good news. yeah, so let's see how Timo Werner does, stretching a defence and making his case for inclusion against Manchester City at the weekend.
Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. Also, listener, if you listen on a podcast platform that gives you the chance to review and rate, if you could give us 5 stars, that would be tremendously helpful and much appreciated. Sam, where in the wide world of football are you this week?
I've got a very quiet week, Matt, other than various podcasts alongside your good self, so I'll probably just start making my way through a large list of jobs around the house.
Lovely stuff. Good luck with those. Listener, many thanks for your company today. Thanks to Sam, Dom and producer Lucy. We'll be back with you on Thursday. Until then, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.